Well, we don't have 16 here. 1, 2.
Are you ready?
We don't have a quorum yet, I don't think.
Ready? Then it will come to order.
Best to have 16 with you, 17, there's 18.
Are we there?
19, yeah, we're there.
Okay, we've got a quorum. Reports from standing committees.
February the 20th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 12, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 65, engrossed.
Committee number 2, isn't it?
What did I say?
12.
Oh, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriation, to whom was referred House Bill 65, engrossed, State Employees Group Insurance County Employees. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hassert, Wassenberger. No, Senators Perkins and Ross. Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 20th, 2015, Mr. President, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 61, engrossed, Wyoming Chartered Family Trust Company Act. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Burns, Senators Burns, Hastert, Ross, Wassenberger, excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman. Marissa.
Okay.
We'll do those.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're back to that order of business for continuation of bills on consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into Committee of the Whole to discuss bills on general file.
Thank you. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Hassert, approach the desk. Hand you the gavel. Lead us to the promised land.
Lead us to the promised land. Committee of the Whole, come back to order. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 77. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 77, Wyoming Retirement System Veteran Service Credit, sponsored by Representative Lindholm. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wassenberger. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Wassenberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 77. And I don't believe there are any standing committee amendments. There is one.
There is one.
I would move that right now.
House Bill 77, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 3, line 1 through 3.
Mr. Chairman, I have the good senator from Laramie County who will explain the amendment and the bill.
Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll start out with the bill. This is a bill to help veterans who work anywhere in the state of Wyoming where they're a member of the Tier 1 and Tier 2 benefits on our retirement system. That's the big retirement system. what they're allowed to do is to buy up to 8 years of benefits, accrue up to 8 years of benefits in the retirement system. If we'd have had this at the time when I was a state employee, I could have only bought four because that's all I was in the military. We right now allow regular employees to buy up to 5 years. It's known as airtime in the system. Now, this system is a wash. Okay. Allowing members to purchase service credit at full actuarial cost does not impact the plan since they are paying in full for their future benefits. And the cost will be different for each employee, each veteran, based on their age, years until retirement, current salary, and which one of the two tiers they're in. Mr. Chairman, this does not allow them to be vested in the program. Before they can buy these years, they have to have done their four-year for Tier 1 and five-year for Tier 2 investment participation in the program. And, Mr. Chairman, I would say that probably most of those that take advantage of this program are ones that have been on a 401k or a 457 plans, which are not as good as our retirement plans, and they can roll those over into it with a little addition of their own money. And at the time they pick these years, they have to pay the entire cost. Now, the Standing Committee amendment on this, page 3, lines 1 through 3, right now says the lump sum may be paid with personal funds or subject to rules and regulations established by the board through rollover contributions. The Standing Committee amendment makes that a little, I don't know if the word's easier, but a little more practical. It says the lump sum may be paid with funds from any source, including rollover contributions, subject to the rules and regulations established by the board. How are they going to prove that it's paid with personal funds? Who knows where they got it from? So this is just a practical, common sense Standing Committee amendment. And at this time, I'd ask for a vote on it.
We're on the amendment. Any discussion on the Standing Committee amendment to House Bill 77? Question being called. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 77, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Ayes have it. House Bill, the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 77 has passed. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope that I have successfully explained the bill. And if there's no questions, I would ask for a favorable vote.
Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And looking at the fiscal note of the WRS, Wyoming Retirement System doesn't believe it will have any impact. My question is, did they do an actuarial study on this, or did it just a feeling she had because there wouldn't be that many coming into the plan? We've got to be very careful about our actuarial studies and being able to maintain those percentages so we don't get ourselves caught in any kind of a situation. So did the actuary actually get involved in it, or is it just something that the director had an opinion on?
Further discussion, Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the director said that they do this frequently enough that it's just a common procedure, and they just go through it. And that's based on the five-year plan, the airtime. And this will just plug in the same way.
Further discussion, Senator Pappas.
On and for the bill, I think it's a great service that we can provide to our veterans who have put military service in and work for the state. Now, remember, if a veteran, you know, has a full retirement, he probably won't go for this. But there are many people who worked in the military who put in 4 years, 5 years, whatever. They're the people that will benefit from this. because in the military, you don't get your retirement until you put one day after 20 years. So, you know, if you retire from the military with, you know, less than 20 years, you get no retirement from the military. So this offers some benefit to the retiree from a military that has military service, but it doesn't impact the state. They do have to buy into the program. Testimony given by the Wyoming Retirement System folks said that, you know, if a young person were to take this program, probably it would cost somewhere the amount of $7,000 or $8,000 per year to buy 1 year of credit. And if you were older, it may be up to $20,000 per year. It's a steep cost. They're not getting any free ride by taking this, but it goes towards and they have to be a state employee. They have to be vested. It goes towards perhaps shortening their rule of 80. It works on the rule of 85. Excuse me, rule of 85. So you know they might buy a year or two towards the end. Who knows? Actuarially sound. The Wyoming Retirement System did not have any issues with it, and I just think it's a great way to extend that service to those folks. And they did say that they can only, the bill says that they only can purchase 8 years. Now, frankly, they can purchase five already because they're a state employee. So, really, we're only giving them another 3 years. So the ability to do so at their own cost, I think, is something that we could do. And so I urge you to allow this. And only about 10% of people in the state actually even purchase any credit. So it's a minor amount, and then there will be even fewer being getting the veteran service credit. So I urge your favorable vote.
Any further discussion on the bill?
Question.
You ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Wasserberger's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 77, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 77 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 172. The reading clerk will read the bill. Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor.
You may.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to invite the members of the legislature to take a look over to the South Balcony. Up in the South Balcony is a number of our Wyoming Outdoor Council. They're going to have a reception tonight. They're inviting us all to. And that's Rich Brame, who's our president, Andy Carson, Janice Harris, Dave Hull, Scott Kane, Beatty Ladd, Hap Ridgeway, and Anthony Stevens. And if I could get Andy to hold his arm up. Is he up here? No, Andy Carson? The other Andy. All right. Anyway. Bunch of good folks, and slip on over to Little America this evening and see him, and thank you for the work you do for Wyoming.
Welcome to the Senate. Hey, we're on House Bill 172. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 172, Disability Placard Designation, sponsored by Representative Kasparek. It was referred to Committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Emmerich, Escobel, Johnson, and Meyer. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee in the whole rise and report, it do so with a do-pass motion on House Bill 172, Disability Placard Designation. And to explain this bill, I will yield to the
Honorable Michael Von Flatter.
Senator Von Flatter.
I was still looking for the right and honorable part, but Mr. Chairman, disability placard designations, House Bill 172, all it does is go into the statutes on giving away the disability or applying for and who can sign off on the disability placards that you see so often on the cars where they can park in the handicapped. It actually allows now advanced practice registered nurses, which is nurse practitioner as we know it, and also physician's assistants are also allowed because they work under doctors, so they sign by a doctor. What this bill, all it does is add advanced practice registered nurse to those that can sign off so you can apply for a handicap sticker. And that's, I'll take questions, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion on House Bill 172? Seeing none, ready for the question. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 172, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 172 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 7. House Joint Resolution 7. It's House Joint Resolution 7. The reading clerk will read the House Joint Resolution.
House Joint Resolution 7, Bear Lodge Project, sponsored by Representative Burkhart. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Cole, Cooper, Rothfuss, Von Flateren, Senator Von Flateren, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Flateren?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a do pass recommendation on House Joint Resolution Number 7, Bear Lodge Project. And there is no amendments that I'm aware of, sir. And I do ask you to give the floor to Senator Driscoll to explain the joint resolution.
Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Joint Resolution 7 is the Bear Lodge Project, what happens to lay in my backyard. Crook County's been lucky to be gifted with one of the largest deposits of rare earths in North America and the best of them. This project is a company's come in and put it together and is into the point of going to the EIS on it. And what this resolution is really about, if you read the bill, as you get near the back, what it's really about is they're to the EIS point, and they've had numerous delays by the Forest Service and agencies as far as meeting timelines. And as we all know, when you get into these projects, timelines are everything as far as federal agencies meeting their promises to do it. And this is a resolution to help that along. I'm going to be fairly brief and quick about it, but rare earths are critical not only to Wyoming but to the United States. They're a big deal. For all of you guys that got cell phones, the screen on it is made out of rare earths, and guess what else? Soda ash. It's Wyoming products. This has got potential to be one of the biggest value-added industries that Wyoming could have facing it coming down the road. It's big in two counties that are really on the lower tier of having good-paying jobs, which happens to be Crook and Weston counties. This project will affect both counties. The mine lays in Crook County. Probably will have, so it's over 100 construction jobs and at least 40 full-time. Processing plant lays in Upton, which is, once again, one of our kind of hardship areas and counties, and provides some really critical and needed employment for it. I'd encourage us to pass this, to give the Forest Service and the other agencies a push to get this EIS done and get the project on down the road. With that, I'd stand for questions.
Is there any further discussion on House Joint Resolution Number 7? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Von Flateren's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Joint Resolution Number 7, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Joint Resolution Number 7 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next resolution for our consideration is House Joint Resolution Number 8. The reading clerk will read the resolution.
House Joint Resolution Number 8, Longer Combination Vehicles Compact Agreement, sponsored by Representative Dave Zwanitzer. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Emmerich, Escobel, Johnson, and Meyer. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the joint resolution. What is your pleasure, Senator Meyer?
I move that when the committee in the whole rise and report it do so with a do pass motion on House Joint Resolution Number 8, Longer Combination Vehicles Compact Agreement. Essentially what this compact agreement relates to is the western states, less Oregon and California, are trying to get together and request that we have some uniformity in our weights on trucks. And that way commerce can basically go from one state to the next state without having to check at every port of entry. So, Mr. Chairman, that's pretty much what it does in a nutshell. Stand for questions, ask for the favorable consideration.
Is there any further discussion on House Joint Resolution Number 8? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a favorable recommendation on House Joint Resolution Number 8, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Joint Resolution Number 8 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next House bill for our consideration is House Bill 159. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill Number 159, Education Writing Assessment, sponsored by Representative Throne. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Cole, Pappas, and Rothfuss. No, Senator Dockstader, Senator Coe, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Mr. Chairman, move in committee the whole rise and report. It do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 159 and defer to Senator Rothfuss.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on the downbeat on this one. Mr. Chairman, I bring House Bill 159, Education Writing Assessment. Mr. Chairman, what this simply does is eliminate the SAWS test from our current accountability model. The SAWS test is the current writing test that's being given. It used to be a component of our PAWS test, our statewide summative assessment. We separated it off a couple of years back. And one of the things we did when we separated it off was say that there would be a limit on the number of hours that would go into the SAWS test so that we could try and narrow it down to only 3 hours. Well, over the last couple of years, as it's been administered, it was not limited to 3 hours. They gave additional prompts. It would be 4.5 hours of time on the floor. It would be over several days. There's a lot of anecdotes about it taking 3 days of effectively class time and scheduled hours to give this summative assessment test on writing. And then realistically, Mr. Chairman, the results were not returned in a timely fashion. There was very little information that could be gleaned from them that was useful or effective from a teaching standpoint. It's relatively difficult to grade them, and they were being sent off to be graded. So we haven't heard a lot positive about this test, but it will cost us about $1.6 million over the next 2 years to continue to administer this test. The recommendation here, Mr. Chairman, is to remove the SAWS test. It would not eliminate the possibility of testing in terms of what the districts would give for writing testing, but we would no longer have it in our education accountability model over the next couple of years. Now, you may recall from previous discussions that we're probably going to end up having a new summative assessment through our accountability model at some point in the future. We don't know when that is. We don't know what that will be, but pretty much everything that could be considered right now will have some type of a writing component in it that will be aligned to our Wyoming content and performance standards. So this is not a piece of legislation that tries to reduce the emphasis on writing. It just recognizes that the tool we're using right now is both expensive and flawed and not particularly useful in terms of the teaching aspects of it. What we also heard, Mr. President or Mr. Chairman, in testimony, which was interesting, all of the testimony supported this removal, was the fact that the districts would like to be able to do these types of things themselves rather than send out the tests. And the reason for that is that the old system, as part of the district assessment, And you may recall also that there's a piece of legislation working its way through that, makes the district assessments the key to demonstrating compliance with a graduation requirement. So there'll be an emphasis on the district assessments. The district assessments, the way they grade these, if they're doing a writing assessment, is they get together all of the teachers, the English teachers, those who do the writing assessments, and they compare and grade together in a collaborative effort to come up with what anchor papers are, what the key writing concepts are that need to get moved along and worked on, so that you can discuss amongst your colleagues which are good papers, which are bad papers, why they're good and bad, and that a lot of educational development or professional development, excuse me, for the instructors used to take place during the grading and assessment of the district writing assessment. But now we have a statewide writing assessment, and they don't do that anymore. It's not a requirement. What this does is return it back to local control for the writing assessment for the district, so the districts can decide how they do it, go back to that best practice. And we also heard that there would be some statewide effort through the Superintendent of Public Instruction and the Department of Education to bring those efforts amongst the districts together. So there was no concern from the districts that this would in any way, shape, or form hold back the writing assessments. They were still going to effectively do them. They were going to do a better job of them, and they were going to have the control locally. We did discuss the possibility of this trying to this effectively de-emphasizing writing in our schools. That is a concern. We talked that through on the Education Committee, and we heard testimony, and I think what it comes down to is that this test that we've had effectively in place or something similar to it for nearly 10 years hasn't done anything to improve the writing in the state of Wyoming. We're still all complaining that the writing's not good enough. We're not seeing any positive results, so continuing down the same path doesn't seem like a useful option. Handing it back to the districts for a couple of years is a reasonable way to get the local control to see what best practices are, and then a few years from now when we come up with a statewide summative assessment, we'll ensure that that has a writing component in it, Mr. Chairman. That's what the legislation does. When you look through the bill itself, it very specifically does just what I said. There's no preclusion from giving a district writing assessment, but it eliminates the language related to the SAWS test in statute in all the places that it does within the Wyoming Accountability and Education Act and the duties of the State Board of Education. Mr. Chairman, that's the bill. I'd answer any questions if there are any. If not, I'd call for the question.
Any further discussion on House Bill 159? Senator Dockstader.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make it quick. Got a lot of legislation to work through this afternoon. I was the no vote on committee, essentially concerned that we had nothing in place to step in and work with, worry about eliminating writing. I see that as I view communications. I see the need for improvements in writing across the state, so I was the no vote on that. But I would like to note that I like that talk of local control. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion on House Bill 159? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 159, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 159 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 39. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 39, Aggregate Campaign Contribution Limits Repeal, sponsored by the Corporations Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill Number 39, Aggregate Campaign Contribution Limits Repeal. And for an explanation of the bill, I'd like to welcome back to the Senate floor Senator Meyer, also known as Wheezy.
Senator Meyer.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to have the privilege of floor just for a little bit. People have asked me a little bit about, well, what have you been doing with yourself here lately, Meyer? You know, and basically what I've been doing is that a few days ago I had a chest x-ray. They saw a spot. I got a CT scan. They got biopsied. No problem. clear, no cancer. But when they did the biopsy, they basically collapsed my lung. And so I've been wandering around with a collapsed lung for the last week or so. It's stabilized at a 20% collapse. And so they say that more likely than not, just with staying away from going out and partying with you guys, you know, and the lobbyists, I'll be just fine in a couple of weeks. So there we have it. Back on the bill.
Back on the bill, so you'll be better in a month or two.
Yeah, a month or two. So, thank you.
Back on the bill.
So basically what this does is repeal a section that placed limitations on campaign contributions. And that was an aggregate limitation. So if you had a PAC or somebody that was going out and putting in $2,000, they could contribute to 25 candidates. And then they'd hit their aggregate limitation, and they were stopped from doing that. Well, there's some discussions here in the last few years that went up to the Supreme Court, and they basically said, well, money is free speech. And what this does is basically get our statutes in compliance with the court cases that have been around the U.S. Supreme Court, and I think there was always also some court cases that were in Wyoming. I'm not sure if that was on this bill or the next bill. But, Mr. Chairman, what it does is take the aggregate of the $50,000 away and get back into the basically what the constitutional ruling was, is that, that money was free speech. And I ask for your favorable consideration.
Any further discussion on House Bill 39? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it does so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 39, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 39 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 38. Reading clerk will read the bill.
44. Well, it's 44.
That was the one I was handed.
Is there
a... Yeah, there's a silly report. I was told it's 38.
38, right there, 44 there.
I have 39 as was handed to me next, or 38 was handed to me next. Where's our majority floor leader?
Why don't we all just stand at ease for a moment?
We're at ease. Tell the sound of the gavel.
I'm good with that.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're either on 38 or 44.
38 on that one, 44 over there, Eli.
I have 38. 38, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. We're on House Bill 38.
Okay.
House Bill number 38, PAC. Campaign Limits and Funding, sponsored by the Corporations Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Lex and Political Subdivision, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
There is not any standing committee amendments, and I again would like to yield to the...
There is amendment.
There is a standing committee.
Can we have that read in at this time?
House Bill 38, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, to engross copy, page 1, line 1.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 38 and ask you to yield to Senator Meyer for an explanation of the bill and the amendment.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'll go through and explain the bill. When we get to the amendment, I'll go ahead and explain the amendment.
Continue.
So, essentially, guys, the bill starts over on page 2. It deals with what prohibitions aren't. And so the language says that prohibitions in this section shall not be construed to prohibit. And then you've got the different groups and civic associations and fraternal and religious groups and so on and other profit or non-profit entities. And then it says you're not going to prohibit it from exercising the First Amendment rights. And that goes on and says that it's going to be an independent expenditure. And an independent expenditure is an expenditure that is made without the consultation or coordination of a candidate or agent of the candidate whose nomination or election for the expenditure supports or whose opponent's nomination or election the expenditure opposes. Now, the new language in there basically just goes in and says that this is also not prohibited, and that's bearing any portion of political action committee's administrative costs or costs of soliciting contributions. And that's just kind of the day-to-day stuff that a lot of these folks do, whether you're a trade union or a civic union or fraternal or religious group or any other profit or nonprofit group, that it's just part of your day-to-day expenses. And so those were brought in underneath the areas that were not prohibited. Now we'll get into the amendment here pretty much. Of course, the first five lines of the amendment are just the conforming language over on the first part of the bill, but the guts of it really over on page 2, line 21. And these are the deletions. And from page 2, line 21, pretty much to line 13 over on page 3, it's deleted. And then you insert in there section 2, which is the repealers for section M, which was deleted. And I believe this was moved, right, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, it has.
Okay. Now, the reason the committee brought this about to repeal it, essentially this was an amendment on the other side. We looked at it and thought that the original work that the interim committee did was probably right, because what the other side had done is brought in a restriction on contributions, saying that no political action committee shall contribute directly or indirectly more than $3,000 per election to any candidate for political office other than statewide offices. And so it was anything you wanted to contribute to a statewide office, but anybody from a dog catcher to a state senator, you were limited to $3,000. And the committee had a good deal of discussion on that, and part of it went into the free speech discussion, part of it went into the cost of elections, and we felt that the House probably didn't do their best work, and we decided to go back to the interim committee position. And I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Any further discussion on the amendment? We're on the amendment. Ready? Senator Emmerich? No. Any question being called on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 38, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment has passed. Back on the bill.
Question on the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Question on the bill being, any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Case's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 38, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 38 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 44. Reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 44, Emergency 9/11 Fees Prepaid Wireless, sponsored by the Corporation Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hicks, Meyer, and Pappas. No, Senator Case. Excuse, Senator Case. Senator Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Lossenberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
And I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill number 44, Emergency 911 Fees, Prepaid Wireless. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. Would you
have that read in?
House Bill 44, standing committee amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 1, line 5.
Mr. Senator Chairman, Case. Thank you. I would move the standing committee amendment number 1 to House Bill 44. Mr. Chairman, this is a bill that extends the taxation and tax collections for providing 911 services to what's called a prepaid telephone. And, Mr. Chairman, this is a prepaid telephone right here. It has a national brand name, and the way it's purchased is you buy the phone, and then you, on a monthly basis, you buy service. Sometimes you buy by minutes. Sometimes you can buy unlimited service. This one's unlimited. They tend to not have their own networks, but they use the networks of the major companies that you're aware of. They tend to be cheaper and provide the same service, and the difference is that they're prepaid. This one I happen to have a credit card on file, so every month they just hit my credit card. Many people buy these and then buy minutes every month, Mr. Chairman, and they just kind of buy as they go kind of thing. So this is to date, these type of phones have not paid any 911 taxes. So they haven't paid anything. The customers using those phones haven't paid anything to contribute to upkeep and extension of our 911 emergency telephone system. And as you probably can recall, that counties and local governments, if they so do so, can levy a tax on what's called the postpaid 911, all the other phones, and also on your landline phones, of up to 75 cents per month. And what the whole gist of this bill is to try to conform a tax collecting mechanism for this other realm of telephones. And it turns out it's just not as easy as it is on the where you have a public utility or near public utility large company providing service, and they can collect 75 cents a line. So, Mr. Chairman, this bill is about developing a structure to collect those taxes. And you can see that the first 8 pages of the bill is all new language. And we've actually worked on this for 2 years, but it occupied a big bulk of the interim. I think we discussed this in 2 out of our 3 meetings, Mr. Chairman, and it required a lot of work. So, Mr. Chairman, page 1, section 1, line 12, 69109, statewide imposition of tax, prepaid wireless, collection, distribution, immunity. And you can just go through here and you can see that we define the taxes on page 2. There is imposed a 911 emergency tax of 1 5/10% on every retail sale of prepaid wireless communications access in Wyoming. That 1.5% is a number that is selected, or a percentage that's selected, to be in rough correlation with the 75 cents that you can be collected on the postpaid phones and the landline phones. It's not going to be a perfect number, but based on what the average bill is, it seemed to be comparable, Mr. Chairman. So we define that a service on the paragraph B on page 2 says that the provider has to collect the tax imposed in subsection A of this section from each purchaser. It's going to say where the tax is, where the sale occurs is in C. And D establishes that the tax is the liability of the service user and the service supplier jointly. E talks about the tax collected the state is separately stated on an invoice, receipt, or similar document provided to the service user by the service supplier. So it has to be separate. This tax shall not be included in the base for calculating any other tax, so it's not compounded. It doesn't add to the sales tax price of a phone or something like that. And page 15 through 21 handles if it's bundled with other services, and it also gives a little de minimis exception for the initial minutes. Lots of time when you buy your first phone, in this prepaid world, you get, say, 5 or 10 minutes of service free. We didn't want to tax that 5 or 10 minutes, and it's too hard to calculate and keep track of, but the real reason that you have those free minutes when you first buy your phone is so that you can activate your phone, you know, and get your number and all those kind of things. I'm on page 4, where the taxes should be remitted, and the Romanette I, the service supplier shall remit to the Department of Revenue all monies collected at the time and in the manner provided by WS3915107A. Now, right now, in the postpaid world, landline telephones and everything else, the normal way we do it now, the vendors of those services remit the tax directly to the taxing authority, either the county or the city government that imposed the 911 fee. Trouble is that doesn't work in this world because we have to do it kind of on a statewide basis. And so that's what that does. It brings the Department of Revenue into it. That's what makes this whole thing a little bit more complicated. And you're going to see with the Standing Committee Amendment, we restored an appropriation and, that helps the Department of Revenue to establish this system. It's not going to be that easy. More detail about the remittance and the audits. And on page 5, the Department of Revenue can establish rules. On section H, line 9, the monies collected by the Department of Revenue under this section shall not be general revenues of the state and shall be held by the department in a separate account for distribution as follows. This is kind of important. The department shall deduct 1% of the total monies collected to cover its administrative expenses and costs, which amount shall be remitted to the treasurer for credit to the general fund. So it's not actually keeping them, but it's collecting 1% goes to the general fund. Romanette 2, after deduction of the amount authorized by paragraph I of this section, or the 1%, the department shall pay all remaining amounts collected to each county that imposes and collects the 911 emergency tax authorized by WS169103. And then Romanette 3 on the next page, the payment authorized by paragraph 2 of the subsection shall be remitted to the county no later than 15 days after the close of the calendar quarter. So 15 days after the quarter. Talks about the obligations of the county on line 8. Each county receiving payment pursuant to paragraph 2 of this subsection shall receive 3% of the total amount pursuant to paragraph 2. Each county shall receive the remaining balance of the amount distributed under paragraph 2 in proportion to the percentage of the county's total population relates to the state's total population. So it's a state, it's a basis of this portion of the tax is on a statewide basis as each county's percentage population is proportional. And we can see what happens if there's this case where there's a city that imposes the tax. That's line 17. If a governing body other than a county imposes a 911 emergency tax, the county in which the governing body is located shall divide all monies received by the county pursuant to paragraph 4 of this section equally between the county and the governing body. So they share it. Romanette 6, all funds received by any governing body pursuant to this subsection shall be expended only for the purposes authorized by the 911 law. And Romanette 7, amounts collected by any governing body pursuant to this subsection in excess of necessary expenditures within any fiscal year shall be carried forward to subsequent years. They can carry it forward. They don't have to spend the money. They carry, some of them carry forward 911 fees now, but I would point out that in general, I think all the counties would tell you that 911 fees don't cover the cost of providing the service, but some do pay ongoing costs out of the general fund and save the tax revenues for when they have to buy equipment. More responsibility of the Department of Revenue, more rulemaking, and on line 14, the Department of Revenue and the Wyoming Public Service Commission shall jointly report to Corporations Committee. We sort of became the Corporations and Revenue Committee for the purpose of this bill. And we really did try to get Revenue to help us with this bill, but they ducked it 2 times during the interim. So, got a report. We get into the Section 2 is the amended language, and you can just see there is existing 911 law, of course. And the reason that 169102 Romanette little A is brought in, you'll see on the bottom of page 9, that we are deleting a reporting requirement that I stuck in here several years ago because I didn't think we were getting good reports about how 911 fees were being collected. We're deleting it from this part of the bill, but we're putting it in more detail and really doing a better job in another section. Page 10 defines the 911 emerging tax is the statewide tax authorized by 169109. You can see that in Romanet 8, we define a service supplier as including a seller of prepaid wireless. We define prepaid wireless on page 11 and 169103 on page 11. We have an exception. I think this is the exception. I've got to look at this for a second, Mr. Chairman. Oh, it says only one governing body may impose a 911 emergency tax for each 911 system, except as provided by WS 169109 for prepaid wireless, where you have this interplay between the city and the county. Mr. Chairman, all we're doing in a little D is changing chapter to act, because we've expanded it from being a simple chapter. And you can see the reporting requirements that are brought in on page 13, lines 11 through 21. It requires that every fiscal year through 2019, the governing body primarily responsible for the expenditure of revenues collected pursuant to this act shall file with the Wyoming Public Service Commission a statement of its gross receipts and expenditures authorized by this act for the prior fiscal year. The Wyoming Public Service Commission is authorized to promulgate rules in consultation with the governing bodies to develop a statement of revenues and expenditures that, to the maximum extent possible, is uniform across governing bodies. On page 14, Mr. Chairman, this says this section shall not apply to the 911 emergency tax imposed on prepaid wireless communication accessed by WS 169109. You can see that this is I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Then we move on to 169104. Is the new created part. That's why that's in there. So remittance of the tax to the governing body, you have to create an exception because the state collects this tax. It's not the governing body. So it's not the county or the city. So that's where there's the exception on line 8. The rest is all existing language with just conforming amendments, for example, changing chapter to act and having that the governing body doesn't have the tax collection responsibility under the created language of 169109. Finally, Mr. Chairman, what we did in the Standing Committee Amendment, Mr. Chairman, was to do two things. The first one is back on page 14, line 1, and where we said we added the words, other than 169109, subsection K of this section shall not apply to the 911 emergency tax. And subsection K is the reporting requirement. We want them to report on all taxes. Mr. Chairman, the other thing is that we reinserted some language that was in the original bill that provided for an appropriation. The Department of Revenue testified in the interim and again in our committee that they would have to build a system to implement this tax. It's handled differently than any system any tax they currently have. That's why we have this appropriation for $282,000 from the general fund to the Department of Revenue. And that is the appropriation your standing committee number one brought in. We submitted it to appropriations, and they may want to address this at this time. It might be easy. I don't know.
We're on the amendment. Any further discussion on the amendment? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 44, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Amendment has passed. We're back on the bill.
Happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 44, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 44 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 88.
House Bill number 88, Health Provider Recruiting Programs, sponsored by Representative Wilson. It was referred to Committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Kraft, Driscoll, Landon, Peterson, Scott, excuse, Senator Scott, Chairman. It was referred to Committee number 2, Appropriation, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senator Burns, Hastert, Perkin, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so the recommendation that House Bill 88 do pass. There was no standing committee amendment from Committee 10, and I will yield to Senator Peterson for a further explanation of this good little House bill. All
right. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bring to you House Bill 88, Health Provider Recruiting Programs. Folks, this is a program that's been in existence for quite some time in helping us recruit physicians to the state of Wyoming. This basically is addressing the loan repayment program, trying to make it a little bit more amiable, to make the program a little bit more effective for the state. Basically, what we're doing here is taking on page 2, line 17, $10,000 and adding $20,000 per year in the exchange for basically enlarging this program somewhat. The original amount was quite a bit larger, but doubling from 10 to 20 is acceptable, and realizing the situation that the state's in right now financially. So we've also, on page 3, you've changed the word from physician to provider to allow other individuals to take advantage of this program besides just physicians, and that is throughout the bill. The other addition is at the bottom of page 3, line 22, looking at the 60 days after the close of an application period, that's being added in there. Again, throughout the bill, provider is substituted for physician. And I believe, Mr. Chairman, that that's about it. There is some cleanup on page 6, on line 5, adding subparagraphs E, B, and D, or B through D. And other than that, Mr. Chairman, I think those are the major changes to the bill, adding from 10,000 to 20,000 and changing physicians to provider. So I'll stand for questions and ask for the body's favorable consideration on this bill.
There is a standing committee amendment that I'd like the reading clerk to read in now.
House Bill 88, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 1, line 6.
Senator Ross.
Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 88. Folks, this goes in on Section 3 on page 7. Current appropriation is $100,000. Your Appropriations Committee reduced that to zero. This is the loan repayment program, which has about $1 million that they use for loan repayment. Testimony in the committee that this additional $100,000, which initially started out at $500,000 until it came over from the House at $100,000, was simply a bonus. Your committee felt that given these times that we all like a little bonus, but we don't even get overtime, so so we'd urge your your favorable consideration of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1.
We're on the amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 88, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While the Appropriations Committee heard quite a bit of testimony on this bill, and we didn't have the power to amend the bill other than to deal with the appropriation. But, folks, you ought to seriously look at the language on page 7, Romanette 6, concerning provider. It means any individual licensed or eligible to be licensed in a healthcare profession under Title 33. When you go to Title 33, there are a host of licensed professions in there. But I believe the good vice president did some sorting through the who could be eligible as a healthcare professional under Title 23, and he came up with about 22 potential licensed healthcare professions that could be included in this bill. And the bill seemed, and the testimony in the committee seemed to be directed at your physicians, your nurse practitioners, your PAs, physician's assistants, and those types of individuals. But you could go all the way down into various other kinds of licensed professions. And we did also hear testimony from the doctor who runs this program that they do have in rules and reg some priority list. We didn't see the priority list, but it may be that a number of those professions would be excluded from the priority list. They never get to them. But we ought to take a serious look at this language, perhaps on second or third reading, to consider how far do you really want to go, and should we tailor what these professions are that are subject to this. And so I'd urge some caution here.
Further discussion, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All's okay, not to worry. The biggest qualifier here is the amount of money in this program. And there are a lot of means testing in this, in the formula. If there's a shortage in a particular county of doctors, physicians, other providers, that's addressed and bumped up in the priority list of these applicants. But if I remember right, the testimony, there were hundreds of applicants, and I think 30 were awarded. So the qualifier is the amount of money that we've appropriated here, and adding another $10,000 to the program isn't going to go down to nurses and other lower providers on the list. So it's all okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion? Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 88, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 88 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 96. Reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 96, Catering Permit Limitation, sponsored by Representative Brown. It was referred to Committee Number 1 Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Kingsley, Von Fladern, and excuse Senator Hicks, Senator Christensen, Chairman.
If you're reading the bill, what is your pleasure? Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on this tipsy bill. House? File 96, House Bill 96. And to present the bill will be Senator Rothfuss.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move. It's already been moved, so we're in good shape there. I bring House Bill 96, Catering Permit Limitation. There are no amendments. This is a pretty straightforward bill. Some of you may or may not know that currently in statute, you see in 12.4.502, there is a limit to the number of 24-hour malt beverage permit and catering permits that you're allowed to have, one organization or establishment is allowed to have at a specific location within any 1 year. So specific premises, you see that on page 2. That limit is currently 12 for the malt beverage permit and 24 for catering permits, and pretty much nowhere in the state does that ever cause any problem, except recently it appears that it's going to at the Marion H. Rochelle Gateway Center and under certain conditions at the University of Wyoming, because there are a lot of events that are catered by local establishments at those facilities. The University of Wyoming is concerned that 24 catering permits per year to one location is going to be exceeded at the Marion Rochelle Gateway Center. It doesn't have its own facilities. It tends to cater into those facilities and uses local businesses to do so. This provides an exemption where there's also currently exemptions for fair, rodeo, paramutual events, and other similar public events, but not for the university's new Gateway Center. This bill remedies that and allows for numerous events to take place at the Gateway Center. Again, this is contracted through local businesses, and it allows individual organizations to be contracted more than 24 times at the same location in 1 year. I'd answer any questions. If there are no questions, I'd ask for it.
Any further questions? Senator Case.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would argue that this bill is unnecessary based on a bill that we passed out of here that lets them get a resort liquor license. They certainly have more than 100 sleeping rooms, and they have convention facilities, and they have food service, Mr. President. And based on the bill we passed, they would qualify. And the great thing about a resort liquor license is you can serve anywhere on your premise. So I can imagine the imaginative things that the university could do with they applied and got a resort liquor license, Mr. Chairman. And so I would argue against the bill.
Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. Chairman, we'll label that Plan B.
Any further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 96, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 96 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 145. Senator Christensen.
Bill 145, Principal and Income Act Amendment, sponsored by Representative Brown. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Kinsky, Von Platern. Excuse Senator Hicks, Senator Christensen, Chairman.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 145. To present this bill is Senator Perkins.
Senator Perkins, Vice President.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I have a really brief pitch of the floor before we start into launch into the exciting explanation of the Principal and Income Act amendments.
Yes, you may.
Mr. Chairman, tomorrow is the birthday of one of our own. Senator Sweet William Landon will turn 59 years old tomorrow, and I would hate for us to disperse today without having the opportunity to wish him a happy birthday and maybe even sing a song to him.
Let's start it out with a happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear William. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Congratulations, Senator Landon. Do you care to make a speech?
Only, Mr. Chairman, I was just informed that if I was out related to the Air Force, that I'd be buying the round right now. So thank goodness I'm not in the Air Force.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe we can retire to the Rochelle Center immediately after this bill, the last bill becomes effective, and Senator Landon can do that for us. Principal income back amendments 145. I'll go through this really quickly why this is important. It comes back as there was a substantial change in the American Taxpayer Relief Act of 2012 and the net investment tax, which came effective on January the 1st, 2013. That coupled with low interest rate environment has changed the way that income and principal and trusts and those types of things work. So this bill comes back to try and modify and provide some additional flexibility to trustees who are trying to carry out what trusts were created for. And so we'll go through this very quickly. Well, we've got, again, because of declining interest rates, what we've got in this bill is in 238.835, what we're doing is giving the trustee additional income to include capital gains and income. This day of low interest rates, oftentimes, just like we're doing here with our own permanent mental trust fund, is we find that in the past, that unless the trust provided otherwise, a lot of times capital gains were all recorded into principal and there was no income from that. In order to make this stuff work these days and to have reasonable rates of return for the current beneficiaries of trusts, giving the trustees some ability and some ability to move those things around, adjust them, is helpful in carrying that out. So that's what that does. Keep in mind that any of these can be overridden by specific language in a trust, but these are kind of default provisions if they're not in the trust. The next thing we do is in 826, section 2-3-826, this gives the trustees additional discretion to achieve the intent of the grantor in the allocation of expenses and fees and costs among income and principal. And this allows, by allocating income and principal and fees, you can maintain the tax and keep the tax lowest, the income tax lowest between the trust itself and those receiving income from the trust. The other side, 827, is the reverse of that. If you're allocating expenses, fees, and costs among income, you also want to be able to do it for principal, so you need both of those in there in 826 and 827 to get that done. In 831, we're allowing giving the trustee additional discretion to achieve the intent of the grantor in allocating fees and expenses and costs of which income taxes are and taxes, other taxes associated with the trust itself, to allocate those between income and principal so that you can achieve the effect of the grantors and keep the tax burdens as low as possible. Finally, in 909, the proposed amendment is to clarify that in that particular amendment we're talking about net income, and so we're removing some words there. Mr. Chairman, that concludes the quick explanation. This is a bill that it just updates what we're doing. It helps make sure that you've got this fair allocation. The guiding principle in this is the beneficiaries we're talking about, Mr. Chairman, are the current beneficiaries, those who receive income from the trust. Remainder beneficiaries get what happens when the current beneficiaries pass away or their opportunities to receive that income is gone. This helps to balance the ability of trustees to manage that for the benefit of both of those and avoids them having to choose or violate the duty of impartiality they have between both income beneficiaries and contingent beneficiaries. We stand for questions and ask for your favorable consideration of
any bill. Further discussion on House Bill 145, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, question, does this then define capital gains as a default position, as income? And if so, does that have an interplay if you have a trust with a subchapter S corporation in it, which or shares in a subchapter S, the IRS requires you if you're going to maintain the subchapter S, to distribute all the income from the trust to the current beneficiary. That may not be the intention, but that's the practical effect of what the IRS regulation is. And is there an interplay here where by passing this bill, we can force the distribution, or the IRS rule would force the distribution of the capital gains in the same way it does ordinary income to maintain that subchapter S qualification, or is that not involved in this particular bill?
Further discussion, Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think to answer the question, what you've got in this is this would only, to the extent that the trustee is given power to make mandatory discretionary distributions of income, the trustee may on an annual basis include realized capital gains in trust income in determining Section 643 of the Internal Revenue Code, distributable net income, if the allocation is, and these are the qualifications, reasonable and partial. When you come back, and what 643 said, the Section 600 is where the grantor trust provisions of the Internal Revenue Code are. And in doing that, what you've got is the distributable net income of a trust is you take the net income from the trust, which is generally, could be capital gains, it could be interest and dividends, which would be ordinary income. And then you're able to deduct against that the deductible expenses of the trust, which are generally expenses of income, of investment, of maintaining property, could potentially be compensation to professionals such as the trustee, accountants or lawyers or things like that. So you deduct that, and in arriving at that, you have this distributable net income. Then the trust, depending on the terms of the trust, oftentimes that distributable net income is oftentimes forced out to the beneficiaries, who then receive it, and they usually will pay the income taxes associated with that income on their own income tax returns, technically are usually at a significantly lower rate than the trust itself pays. The trust itself has a very compressed income tax rate, and by the time you get it about $12,000, it's paying taxes at 35%. So by that tax rate, it's typically forcing that income out, because if it's retained and it's above that, you're paying income tax at a 35-39% income tax rate. So it's forcing those out. What you're doing here is allowing them, the trustee has some ability to allocate capital gains as a part of income so that it can be distributed out to the beneficiaries, thereby helping avoid income tax, but also recognizing that anymore, oftentimes, that there's not enough income from simply dividends and interest to carry out the purpose of the trust, which is to provide support or assistance for the income beneficiaries. Probably didn't understand that at all, but that's the answer to the question.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 145. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 145 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, it's been quite a week. You've done great work for the people of Wyoming, and with that, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
Hey, you've heard the motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion has passed. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We don't need to have. Don't we need to have the? Okay. Okay.
Let's go ahead and read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Vice President, the Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows: House Bill 237, do pass. House Bill 56, do pass amended. House Bill 128, do pass. House Bill 231, do pass. House Bill 233, do pass. House Bill 225, do pass amended. House Bill 32, do pass amended. House Bill 77, do pass amended. House Bill 172, do pass. House Joint Resolution 7, do pass. House Joint Resolution 8, do pass. House Bill 159, do pass. House Bill 39, do pass. House Bill 38, do pass amended. House Bill 44, do pass amended. House Bill 88, do pass amended. House Bill 96, do pass. And House Bill 145, do pass. Co-chairmen, Senators Pappas and Hastert.
Thank you. Senator Hastert.
Mr. Chairman, or Mr. Vice President, I move for the Committee of the Whole report. Adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
Heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole report has been adopted. Next, I think we've got, do we have messages from the House? Messages from the House, oh boy.
February the 20th, 2015, from the House of Representatives, message number 324, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 35, Security Breach Notification. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 59, excused 1. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 325, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 46, fire misdemeanors. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading, amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 59, excused 1. The House respectfully asks the House, asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 326, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 63, predator ownership. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 37, noes 22, excused 1. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. From the House of Representatives, message number 327, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate Joint Resolution number 2, investment of state funds. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 48, noes 11, excused 1. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. From the House of Representatives, message number 328, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 36, personal identifying information definitions. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 59, excused 1. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur to adopted amendments. House of Representatives, message number 335, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 102, medical billing provisional providers. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 59, excused 1. Senate file number 117, air quality construction permitting. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 59, excused 1. From the House of Representatives, February the 20th, 2015. Third message, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below pass the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 6, Aquatic Invasive Species, Ayes 59, excused 1. Senate File 10, Education Administration 1, Ayes 59, excused 1. Senate File 20, School Finance Excess Mill Levy Rebate, Ayes 59, excused 1. Senate File 23, Enhanced Oil Recovery Commission Amendments, Ayes 59, excused 1. Senate File Number 25, Cease and Transfer Priority List, Ayes 59, excused 1. Senate File 31, Department of Health Reports Cleanup, Ayes 59, excused 1. Senate File Number 34, Interstate Mining Compact Commission Membership, Ayes 57, Noes 2, excused 1. Senate File 37, State Protection of Data Privacy, Ayes 59, excused 1. Senate File 38, Controlled Substances First Offense for Possession, Ayes 59, excused 1. Senate File 60, Deferred Compensation Plan Automatic Enrollment, Ayes 58, Noes 1, excused 1. Senate File 64, Wyoming Health Insurance Pool Act Extension, Ayes 51, Noes 8, excused 1. Senate File 70, Cooperative Electric Utility Rate Adjustment Notice. Ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1. And Senate File 94, Substance Abuse Assessments, Non-Residents. Ayes 59, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Thank you. Standing committee reports.
February the 20th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 152 engrossed, Industrial Siting Impact Payments, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Cole, Cooper, Rothfuss, Von Flateren, Senator Von Flateren, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have anything else? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk. Senator Von Flateren.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Was that 152 that was just read in? So 152 does have an appropriation, and I ask without objection, I ask that it be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Without objection, is so ordered. Anything else? Ms. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. Vice President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday, February 23rd.
Great. Are there any announcements? We'll start on our left, Senator Von Flateren.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. On Monday morning, we didn't get our work done today, so your committee number 9, Minerals and Economic Development, will meet to consider House Bill 212, engrossed workers' compensation claim, about 15 minutes after noon recess.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet Monday, February 23rd, 8 o'clock, Room S1, to consider the following bills. House Bill 180, Engrossed Child Interviews, Neglect and Abuse Cases. House Bill 150, Arrests for Violation of Probation. House Bill 186, Engrossed, Human Trafficking and Forfeiture of Property.
Since committee number 2 will meet on Monday, February 23rd at 8:30 in S11 to consider the identification of identical and non-identical amendments to House Bill 1, Government Appropriations 2. Your Appropriations Committee will then meet also upon noon recess to consider the following bills. House Joint Resolution 5, Mandatory Judicial Retirement, and House Bill 11, Distance Education Task Force Re-Referral, and House Bill 126, Candidate Filing Requirements Re-Referral.
Thanks, Senator Ross. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Your committee number 8, Transportation.
Is the microphone on?
Your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet Monday, February 23rd, upon adjournment in Room S14 to consider the following bills. House Bill 85, Engrossed, Motor Vehicle Passing Bicycles. House Bill 193, Engrossed, Veteran Burial Teams. House Bill 143, Engrossed, Motor Vehicle Registration Fees.
That it?
That's it.
Thank you very much. Senator Cole.
Mr. Vice President, your committee number 4, Education, meet Monday, February 23rd at 8 up in S13 to continue work on House Bill 144, Engrossed, Education, School Safety and Security, and House Joint Resolution 10, Engrossed, Magna Carta. And for an early announcement on Wednesday, hopefully slow down some of the emails, we will take up House Bill 114, Wyoming Repeal Gun-Free Zones Act.
Thanks. Thank you, Senator Coe. Senator Scott.
Mr. Vice President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Monday at 8 a.m. in the normal committee room, House Bill 174, Engrossed Nicotine Products Regulation. House Bill 162, Engrossed Providers Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment.
Thank you. Senator Case?
Just clear my desk.
Okay. Are there any other announcements? Seeing none, Mr. Majority Floor, did you say 10 o'clock? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say, I've heard the motion to adjourn. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We stand as Senate stands adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday, February the 23rd.